Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Are you someone who has ADHD and has trouble trying to figure out your career path and trouble trying to figure out what jobs to apply for? Well, my next guest has written a course book that should help you do just that. Figure out what your career is and what the path to take is. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage, and let's find out more about her. See you there.
I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't fit in. I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I am joined with Shel Mendelson, who is an ADHD career coach. Welcome to the show, Shel.
Well, thank you, Reed. It's great to be back.
All right, so why don't you refresh my guests on a little bit about your background and a little bit about yourself?
So, as you said, I'm an ADHD career coach. My name is Shel Mendelson, and I have a my website is Career Coaching with Shel to keep it make it easy. It's also passion2career.com. So you can see all of those things are very, very career focused. I am not an AD, I just want to, I always qualify, I'm not an ADHD coach. I am a career coach with a career coaching and counseling background. My master's degree is in vocational rehabilitation counseling. And then I was trained by Richard Bowles, who wrote What Color Is Your Parachute? And used his methodology for many, many years. Still use it to some extent. My new methodology is inspired by that. And I have been working in the field again for 35 years. I've worked with probably 1,500 clients over that time and impacted probably, since I started doing the Your Next Career Move Masterclass about 3.5 years ago. I've had the great opportunity to work with probably 200 or so clients in the in a group of 4 to 6. So the class is always filled up. It's been ongoing for quite a while, and it's the next level for what I do. It's a way that I just take walk people through it, make them it's instructional, it's interactive, and it's code. Provides coaching and support. So, in addition to that, I really truly believe that after all the years I've been doing this work, having a cohort of people who are experiencing the same issues in the workplace and making the decision to take the class because they have too many ideas and they can't figure out where to go and what the process they need to be doing to get there is, that is what I do. So, when people often introduce themselves, as I have so many ideas, as it says on my website, do check. That this is what I do. I take people through how do you figure this stuff out so that you now have your direction. Your direction is clearer, it's more clarified, and you now have the beginning steps to get there. Those steps could be anywhere from just transferring the skills you have into a whole new field that really matches up with what you personally align with, the kind of people you want to work with, and the kind of activities you want to be doing. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that later, but that is one of the things that people make decisions about. The other one is, do I need extra training? Do I need to get training in something very specific? So that can mean anything from certification programs to internships to even graduate programs or very specific majors in college or something like that, or just online classes, webinars that are very much directed to what it is they're looking to do, instead of all the fluff that people, all the distracted classes and shiny object classes that people end up taking. Just to get satisfied that maybe they're doing something, but end up not doing anything with it, like I've done. I don't know about you, but I've done quite a few of those. So it ends up saving so much time and money in the end, being able to have this information and layer foundation. And that's what I do. I do the foundational work and the an answer to the question, what do I want? And then the beginning of the how do I get there? The beginning steps. So I started doing my master class about 3.5 years ago, like I said. Last year was my first year of doing a ton of podcasts to help get the word out. So if people want to hear me, they can always listen to some of the podcasts that are on the website and get to know me. A lot of times I get calls from people who say, oh, I feel like I know you. I've heard you so much. I've been following you. And it's kind of unnerving in a way, but it's great. You know, it's nice, that familiarity, because that's what I want. I just want people to relate to what I'm saying, to know that basically I am what you see is what you get with me. I am who I am. No apologies. So that's it for now. Yeah. I could go on, but.
So what prompted you to write your course book or your workbook, I should say?
Well, I had been using the What Color Is Your Parachute workbook, fifth edition. I didn't, even though there's a sixth edition, it was produced after Dick Bowles passed away in 2017. And it was not what I was comfortable with. It changed quite a bit because his fingerprints were no longer in it. His influence was no longer there. But it wasn't just that. It got to be that I had to jerry-rig, or however you want to say, the workbook so much all the time. And then because I was working with ADHD people, I had to add more content, which they were able to download from my website. But I had to create metaphor, picture, graphics for people. I had to write articles and do all kinds of additional activities to help people really break this stuff down with our brain wiring. And I realized that I was kind of sick of having to do all that maneuvering. And I knew I had to do this course book years ago. I knew it. But you know how it is. Sometimes you get the kick in the butt that you need. And that was, I think, one more time where I just said, no, I can't do this anymore. I got to start working on this. I had all the pieces. I had put all the pieces together. You know, I mean, all of them were available on my website. Now it was time to put it together into a, and you have the book, so you know, it's very graphic, it's colorful, it's very ADHD friendly, I'm hoping. Would you agree?
Yes, very ADHD friendly.
Yeah, and I also noticed that when I read other ADHD books by ADHD authors, it wasn't necessarily ADHD friendly. The little print, big paragraphs, not much broken up. And I realized that we need lots of graphics, we need pictures, we need, so this is 8.5 by 11 versus a smaller version. And it's so that there's room to write in. I'm going to be doing a fillable PDF for college students, because I understand now that college students don't buy books much anymore. So I'm going to be doing a fillable version of that. It's hopefully sooner than later. I'm trying to get the info on that. Also going to do an audio companion to help people work through it as well. This is coming up probably in the next year or so. I just need to promote the book so people have it in their hands and they can give me more and more feedback. And of course, the second edition will be an upgrade from this edition. But you know how it is. It's just a process over time. But I've had amazing feedback from people. I've talked to people who are working through it or getting answers for themselves. And we can talk. We were just talking about accountability. There's a whole section on accountability there. It's really meant to be used with another person. If you're not going to be taking the master class, then it's very important to work with one or even two other people through the process, preferably somebody else who's going through it too, so that you can keep each other accountable. So that's what one that's why I wrote it. I wrote it because nothing like it is out there. I know that because I did it and I looked to see if there was anything even remotely comparable, and there isn't. I asked Dick Bowles' wife who's now running his foundation, how she felt about it. She wanted me to do it under the 10 speed press, but they rejected it. So I said, I told her, okay, I'm just going to self-publish because it has to get done. They weren't ready to do this work. And when I think about if I had had a publisher, it wouldn't look anything close to the way it looks now. It would look completely different. It would be kind of, I'm sure it would be a shadow of itself, if you know what I mean. So I'm very proud of the way it came out. I'm very proud that it's got all the nuances to it that I wanted. There are a few things that I wish that there were tabs that were sticking out, but that was like an expense I wasn't ready to take on until I got more feedback on the book itself. So far so good.
Right. So in your book, you talk about different things. One of the things you mentioned is why someone with ADHD have problems finding work. Why do you think those with ADHD have a problem either both looking and finding work?
You know what? I don't know that people with ADHD have a problem actually finding work, because one thing, and a lot of people with ADHD will agree on, that we are great in interviews. We are just great. We can win over the job. But then once we get in, it's more staying in the job than getting the job. Okay. Now with all the online stuff, it's not just people with ADHD, it's everyone. So many people spend hours and hours, you know, doing applications that they never ever hear anything back on. So to me, that is just a terrible waste of one's time and energy. And it's soul crushing, which, you know, creates a lack of confidence, or feelings of a lack of confidence, or whatever feelings come from that, which are never very good. But when you're starting to make progress, it's because you know what you want. So if you ask me what the key is, it's always knowing what you want with clarity and focus, knowing and being able to articulate that and being familiar. And also one other thing, owning it unapologetically. It doesn't mean you have to be in somebody's face, but with confidence, being able to express that. Because if you do anything less than that, if you become what I call a job beggar, where many people do, especially nowadays, because it's, you know, don't get me started on how things are now, but when you apply for jobs, it's usually you trying to win the employer over, and you know all the panels and the processes that people have to go through just to get to level three, and then they get completely thrown out because somebody else comes in, and maybe they never had an intention of hiring somebody from the outside to begin with, but they were going through it for legal reasons or whatever. And then there's the PIP programs that we can talk about. But it's really important, when you know what you want, you can articulate that, and you can become the job developer. You can develop the position for yourself. Like, you're more in control. You're the one who's asking specific questions to make sure that once you get on board, this is what you want, or a better chance of having that match with what you want. It's not perfect, but it puts you in a far better position when you're able to clarify to the potential employer, under these conditions, I am able to do dot, dot, and dot. I can produce dot, dot, and dot. And I am I can focus very much on some of the things that you're saying in this job description you're looking mm-hmm. for. So it's more of a conversation back and forth. It becomes more of a two-way, a participatory kind of process, rather than a one-way trying to please the employer and say what you need to say to get the job. That's not going to work for people with ADHD. It just doesn't work. Did I answer your question?
Reed? Yeah.
Okay.
I know in your book, you talk about it's important to know your authentic self when you're searching for work. When you talk about that, are you talking about being true to yourself, about not
yes.
lying about what your
yes.
things are, but putting your putting down on your resume, this is what I can do, and not this is what I can do.
Always what you can do that's related to the position. I always say keep it current to that position. You don't have to put all your past history that has nothing to do with that job. Just keep it very current and know what you want, number one. And here's proof of how the things I've done in the past that prove to you that I can do this job. And here's the position that I am looking for that you have sussed out for yourself. Is the correct or at least the right direction. Now, once you get into the interview, you might find that this is not the right culture. These are not my people. This is not, they may say one thing on paper, but boy, they sure aren't showing up that way. And you need to really be aware of that and feel confident that you are not going to take something that is going to put you in that one down position once you get in. Another question I like to make sure people ask is the job in the interview, is the position that I am interviewing for today, the position I will be doing on day one? Have you heard of the bait and switch?
Yes, I've read stories where
Yeah.
somebody goes in and they say, you're going to be making this amount of money. And then they go in and they
Yeah.
say, HR goes, oh no, that was a snafu in the application. You're going to be
Snafu.
making this amount. And then they're like, I'm sorry, but I signed up for this position because of what you posted. That's a bait and switch. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to quit.
That's one form of a bait and switch. Another form, and that's a really bad one as far as I'm concerned, but another one is that you start the job and they go, oh, before you actually do this job that you thought you were signing up for, they don't say that. We'd like you to sit over in this area and do this work, which has nothing to do with it, which is it may have a little to do with it, but very little. And it's like a lower form of that position. And it may have a lot of the elements that you detest. That you, if you were to go through this process that I do with folks, it would be a red flag for you. Like, no, this is not. And that can. Then you end up losing interest, you end up getting bored, you end up, whatever the results may be with our brain wiring, it's not a good thing. You lose confidence, and you may never end up in that position that you originally applied for. So that question has to be answered, and it has to be answered with eye contact and absolute, without absolute confidence. They need to be saying, yes, you will be doing this. This is the work you will be doing. And they explain to you what the work is. You ask them, well, is the general culture such and such? Like, what is the dress of the company? How do people, what is the hierarchy? You need to get at some information about the culture of the company. Is it, I mean, there might, I can't think of the word. Well, micromanage comes to mind, but there's another word. Like, do they check, double check? Do they provide clear instruction on projects? Are the instructions written out? Those are all reasonable questions to ask because our brain, that's what we need, right? These are the things that our brains need. So go ahead. Yeah.
All right. I've read in your book that you talk about that those of us who have ADHD, when we're looking for work, there are words that pop in their heads that kind of stop us from looking because we feel we're not qualified or we can't handle it. What are some of the things that people deal with and how do they get past that?
So are you talking about in the interview or just in going through the book and answering the questions authentically? And you can't
Going
rig the
through
system by
before the interview, just looking at the job qualifications and just talking themselves out of applying for it.
the first thing, the purpose of doing this is to really get enough clarity about the kinds of places that you want to work and doing enough research on those places that you have some idea when you go in. You're not just responding to tick the boxes job posting. You're actually finding out more about the company and more about whether or not it might be a good fit for you. And the way you do that is you complete this, the planets. Remember I told you about the planets? So as you're going through the book, you're answering questions, and all your must-haves, the thing that you absolutely must have in terms of your preferences, end up on this. Okay. So if you, before you even apply, you have that to sift and sort with. So it's not that it's a perfect system, but it gets you like maybe 80% closer to applying for the right position, because the unknowns are the people that you're talking to, the people that you're actually working with on a day-to-day basis. Again, when you're working for someone else, you're always going to be subject to shifts and changes within that company. That's unavoidable. So you may think you're working for one person, and then that person gets demoted, promoted, leaves, and somebody else comes in who's someone you can't work with. And that can change everything. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. All it takes is one bad manager, the CEO, or the companies merging together. Then you're worried about layoffs. Who's going to get laid off? And always, when you come armed with this information, completing this, you're in a much better. You have a much better ability to negotiate for yourself and to determine whether or not you even want to stay, and to begin to look at maybe other opportunities that might be more appropriate. But you're going to have the words for it, right? Just knowing what you need and what you want, even if it seems out there, and it never does once you complete this, it's not out there. It's you being honest with yourself. Because with ADHD, if we don't enjoy what we're doing, how long do you think we're going to last? Especially in the corporate world, how long do you think we're going to last? We might go on, we can fake it. And usually that's what it ends up being, is trying to play along the game and pretend to be neurotypical for a while. And that never, never works. Ask anyone.
No,
anyone listening to this certainly knows what I'm talking about. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, but that leads to burnout. I mean, even in the autistic world, we go in pretending to be something else. We come home, we're burnt out. We close ourselves off for 45 minutes to an hour just to come back down to a comfortable area we're familiar with.
Sometimes some of the people looking through this book might think some of it's kind of outrageous. Like, how can you actually ask these questions and expect me to answer authentically without throwing myself or putting myself in a position where I'm not going to make enough money or do what I want? But I can tell you that you cannot rig the system, like I said, that it's always going to come back to who authentically you are. And you have to answer honestly, which means this little guy called this guy, I gave it a guy gender, I shouldn't do that, but this little thing called the safekeeping self, which is part of all of us, which you read about. I don't know if you had a chance to read about in the book.
Yeah, that's like when all of a sudden we start getting these words that pop in our mind. Can't, won't.
Won't, shouldn't.
And it's stopping of saying, it's safekeeping, and it's telling us, we're not capable of doing this job, but we don't know that.
How do we know? All you know is that these are the things that are, anything that's important to you is putting you, believe it or not, when you're honest with yourself, you are going to be far better at whatever you do. You're going to be the top of your game at whatever it is you end up doing. And you are going to be articulate, and you're going to be the go-to person. Because when you honor that, you become like an expert in whatever it is that you're doing on some level. And you start connecting with people, other people that you're excited to connect with, and networking with people that you're excited to network with, and joining organizations that are and meeting people that are going to help promote you and talk about you to other people. And that's kind of where this goes. It's not easy because most people are not trained to think this way. We're kind of, I guess I have to use the word propagandized into thinking that you have to pick a career that is practical. If you go to college, you've got to go to college, but never mind knowing what to major in to get you the work that you, to do the work that you want to be doing. It's like, how do I get a job? Just get a job. I got to take these classes or do this thing. Or nowadays, going to college with all the debt people are in from student loans, you can't, most people can't afford to do that without having some clear direction first. So this prevents all of that mayhem in terms of what do I, you know, I'm now I've graduated from college and I don't even know what I want to do still. I get a lot of people like that. I have people with PhDs who went through that level of training and still don't know. Double PhDs. Every educational level you can imagine.
I know
and,
that. I mean,
yeah.
I know that feeling. I have a master, and it's done me no good because companies don't even look at that. They look at your qualifications and what you've done. And I've recently learned that you need to tailor your resume towards the job. Get rid of anything that doesn't qualify for that position. And I've told that to my friend. You need to tailor your resume. They're looking at all this stuff and they're probably thinking, it has nothing to do with the job. Why are you pointing it on there?
But when you say the job, does he know what the job, what the best job is for him? Does he think
all he knows is what he's done, has been doing in the past. He's worked 30 years. He's done housekeeping for hotels and stuff, and that's what he's been looking for. And it's just, I mean, I talked to him about it, and he's like, but I have to keep this position on because this is the longest position I've had. They're going to probably ask where I've been and what I've done.
Yeah, they can ask all those things, but that is not a substitute for how you come across. And when you're confident, you come across with confidence. Like, you know what it when you meet a confident person compared to somebody who's just like,
you can tell
please
by
give
their
me a job, you know, or please take me, you know, they're in that one down position.
I've talked to them about that, and I've talked to other people about that. Is that when you go to a job, you can't look desperate. They can read it right off of you. That's why it's better. That's why they always say it's better to apply for a job when you already have one, because you have that cushion and you feel a bit more confident in yourself, as opposed to where you're applying when you don't have one, you're more desperate. And I think the employers read that from you somehow.
They need to be doing this work before they even apply for the next job. Really, they need to do this work first. Everybody, I hate to say it, but probably less than 1.000.1 whatever people on the planet go through a process like this. That's why you find so many people with or without disability, neurotypical, whatever, who really hate their work and are really and are literally getting sick on the job because they're in the wrong job. And people with ADHD, I guess the advantage we have, if you want to call it that, is that sometimes we can things will start showing up sooner, not in a good way, but they'll start showing up sooner than maybe a neurotypical person who can make it last longer, who can stick with it for a while. And then they end up sick as hell, right? You've heard of the person retiring and then dying from a heart attack. My cousin, he died from pancreatic cancer like a year after he retired. And he was in a job that was toxic for him. That's my cautionary tale that I tell people. It was my cousin, and he was healthy as a horse in terms of physically, on the outside, but on the inside, he was taking all these medications. He was having all kinds of stomach problems and all kinds of things that were related to the job, the toxic environment he was in.
I think, I mean, that brings up a good point. People are just, even in the toxic environment, they're afraid to leave the job because
Fear and
it's,
fear will cause more toxicity. That will cause more toxicity in your body. That fear. Anytime you have an emotion that's that strong, it works on your heart. It works on your blood pressure. It works on, I mean, I'm not a doctor, but anybody can see that. I can tell whenever I'm stressed out, my blood pressure goes up. I have one of those cuffs. At my age, I gotta have a cuff. And I can see when it goes up, right after a conversation I've had, that has been stressful. So being in a 8 hour or more position per day where you're not able to be yourself, you're not living, you're not using skills you want to be using, you're not around the right people, your working conditions are horrible. You don't have those detailed out, which is what we do. We detail them out. There's so many pieces of the puzzle that don't get played because of trying to keep up with status quo. Keeping things just as even keeled as you think they're going to be until they're not anymore. And people with ADHD generally arrive at that a lot sooner than neurotypical people.
I mean, that brings me to the next question. I mean, you talk about the preferred working conditions for someone with what would the perfect working conditions be for someone who has got ADHD?
That's a very personal, that's what I call the self-accommodation plan. And that whole chapter allows you to list out all, it's starting with what conditions don't work for you. So it's very personal, but it gives you the process to use. It gives you the tools to put all that information down, right? And exactly what to say and what to look for. And it gives you examples of what. So it starts with what you don't want. First of all, you make a list of everything that doesn't work, that has never worked for you, both on the physical and the non-physical plane, like physically, office, all the surroundings, all your sensitivities, like lighting, sound, even color, the color of the walls, the carpeting on the floor, is it hardwood or, all those things do make a difference. What kind of do you need an office? And it's okay to say you need an office. It doesn't mean you have to every they have to construct one for you, but at least you need a space to have to either go off on your own so you have some ability to some flexibility there. Maybe and to work from home, do you need a hybrid situation or are you outgoing and prefer to be with people? Those are all things that it's very individual to that person that you have to suss out. You have to say, start with all the things you don't want that don't work from all the jobs that you've had in the past where things just went crazy and they didn't work for you and you just wish they had been different. And then you turn it around, each one of those things to the other side of what would be the positive side of that or the other side of that. Which means that if you're working, say, in an environment that's micromanaged, where everybody is like watched and you have so much time to do this and you can't go to the bathroom more than 3 times a day, all these things where it's very much micromanaged. And then what that doesn't work. If that doesn't work for you, what is the other side to that? How would you describe the other side to that? Like having more flexibility, not, being allowed to do the work, my work without supervision, being given enough time to get a project done. How would you describe that? What would be the other side of that for you? That's why I say it really is personal. And it's not, a shortcut. You can't shortcut that part of this process. That's the biggest, one of the biggest pieces right there.
Right.
Yeah.
I can say one of the things I really do like you put in the book, you have them write the characteristics and behaviors of people they prefer to work with and like to work for, because
Yes.
this means when you're going into and applying for a job, you already know ahead of time what the company is, what
Yep.
you want to work for, what kind of people is. This is
Yep.
why when I've applied for jobs, I do research on the company. I look
Yeah.
for the one of the first tabs I look for is their culture. How do they treat their employees? What do they do for their employees? And one of the best questions you can ask a company and an employer during the interview is, what kind of culture do you have? What do
Yep.
you do for your employees? What kind of benefits do you give us?
Yeah, what are you going to give me? You know, here's what I need. But the thing, the difference is that you can actually tell them what you need to do to do a great job for them.
Yeah.
That this is the kind of environment that you thrive in, right? And I really like that you say, you know, that's what this process is meant to do. It's meant to give you that knowledge ahead of time, so that you now know what you need already. And you can read it on their faces when they're lying to you. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's why they always say when you're
Yeah.
interviewing, they're not just interviewing you, you're interviewing them to see if they're a
Yes.
good candidate for you.
Well, apps 100. Yeah. And a lot of people still buy into that job beggar thing. And in fact,
No.
most people do.
No, if
Most
you're
people go in as a job beggar, like they just need the job. They tick off all the boxes. Can I get this job? How much does it pay? They don't look at the, like they even, in this process, you even outline what benefits you need to support you in this work. What are important to you? And what are the rewards? Like, does this company value when people do extraordinary things or do go out and, you know, think outside the box or do something exceptional? Do they reward you, or at least by telling you great, good job, you know, if that's what you need, or recognition of some kind, giving you recognition. If that's important to you, for some people it's not, they don't care. But for other people, it is very important. Recognition is important. So that's the non-paid benefits, the rewards, basically. And knowing those things are questions, whatever you know can be put into question form. So whatever you know is true for you.
I mean, I remember when I was working at a company, I had helped this one client out, and they got an email from my boss. They sent an email to my boss telling him how good I was, and my manager came up to me and said, "So and so said wrote a letter saying that raving about you, how wonderful you were." He's like, "This is what we call a zeta boy. It's like a pat on the back, and we
Yeah.
put this in your file so we know how good you are."
So how did that feel for you?
That felt good because
Yeah.
when you're working in a fast-paced environment and you sit
Yeah.
there, I mean, the story was I was working for an internet service provider and we had just lost connection to the internet because of construction outside and things are hectic. And I got this one call in from a client, from a user of our services, and I sat on the phone with him for at least 15, 20 minutes, helping him get his connection, explaining things. And he was so thankful that he wrote a letter to my boss and my manager. He showed it to my manager. My manager's like, "Listen, we got this letter from so and so saying raving how well you were, and this letter's gonna go in your folder, and it's like a zeta boy. It's a pat on the back.
So
It makes you feel good."
that's fantastic. So, but that's important to you. Now, some employers may not even do anything like that, even though they might get tons of letters on you and never show it to you as a way to kind of control, you know, how much they pay you, what kind of bonuses they're going to get, all of that stuff. Without you being able to recognize your own worth, they're not giving you the opportunity to do that. And that works to s some employers' advantages. But do you We probably know or have an idea of who some of those employers are. Would you want to work for those employers?
And ones that don't show it? No.
Yeah.
I want to
So
work.
knowing, already knowing that is so important, though. Yeah.
That's why it's important to know the culture of a company, to know how they treat their employees.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, and this is why your book is so important nowadays, because it's become the employer's market where it's no longer we have the upper hand. It's like you said, it's the beggar's market. People are desperate to find work. They look at the job application and they just say, oh, I have this, 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 and this. And they don't think, well, what about everything else about for me? Is this, and you talk about transferable skills. I mean, do you have transferable skills that can match this company and make them happy or make you happy?
That's the question. That's your question, not theirs.
Yeah.
Your question for them. And yeah, I'm just going to come out and say it. I'm here to disrupt all that. That this book is meant to disrupt that process and put you back in the driver's seat.
I think that's what needs to be done, is because of the thought process of today's thinking.
Yeah.
Especially with those who have ADHD, our minds are wired in such a way that we don't think about ourselves beforehand. All we think about is, I need X, Y, and Z. I don't think about, do I have these skills that I can transfer to this job that match the job? I don't think about, can this company make me feel comfortable? I don't think about this. All I think about
Or
is,
do I want to use those skills? Are those
yeah.
skills important for me to use? Do I, and how often do I get to use them? What percentage of the workday do I get to use those skills? That's important, because people can be able to use some of them, but it may be such a small percentage that the things that they don't particularly enjoy using. And some people find that when they do this work, they look at the skills that are the top that they have identified as being their most preferred must-have skills to use on the job, generally the top five, right? And they realize that most of their work life, they've never had a chance to use those skills to any degree. And then it becomes clear why they're not happy. There's a direct correlation. It's like, what
I
if you're a
mean,
person who loves to solve problems?
yeah.
And you're never given a chance to solve any problems, but that's such an important skill that you value using, and you have so much fun when you get to do it, like problem solve in different ways, strategize in different ways, we love to create systems. We are great system creators. What if you're in a job that not in a million years would you get to create a system of any kind? You may do it inadvertently without, you know, just for yourself, but to be able to create a system on a larger scale and have it recognized by the employer as something that could be a game changer, right? That's how our brains work. We're so creative. That comes into the creativity category. That's where most people with ADHD have a need to use their creativity in some fashion. And it's not necessarily art or music or things, you know, that kind of creativity. It's creativity in terms of how you think, and you're able to use those skills, those thinking skills.
I really think a lot of people nowadays are so scared to ask the right questions that they ask the questions they feel are necessary, but they don't ask the questions
Yeah.
that benefit them. I mean, they ask pay, they ask benefits.
Yeah.
Yes, about last person who had the position, but they don't ask, what can you do for me?
Right.
Is the question. And they wind up in a job they're not happy with. And like you've mentioned, they wind up with a problem with mental health.
Yeah. That's the bigger result of not doing this kind of work in advance of applying for these positions. And sometimes, even a simple, you know, to make a shift of some kind, you might need just a certification program that, and you know what that program is, and you've talked to the people ahead of time to find out where those people have been placed or what they, how they use that certification. There's some legwork that needs to get done before you actually apply for that job, unless, you know, maybe it's if it's a job that doesn't require specific skills. And that's what I call a means to an end job. If it's a means to an end job, at least you know there's a beginning, middle, and end, right? That it's not going to be ongoing for the rest of your life. And while you're in that position, there's hopefully the goal of completing this kind of work before you make the decision to take on maybe education of some kind or training of some kind so that you can get the clarity and the qualifications that you need to do what you really want to be doing to get started in that area, at least make a move. And I like to say the first move may not be 100% perfect. It may be more like 65%. But when you ask people what percentage of all this that when they do this work, what percentage is your current job of what you really want? And they'll say maybe 10 or 15%. That's usually what people say. Very rarely, some say not even that. Can you imagine doing work every day for how many hours where you're only at 10% of what you really want to be doing? How frustrating that could be?
And Woo. This explains why 90% of those of us who have ADHD don't quit that job and move on to something else because we're not doing what we were told we were supposed to be doing.
Exactly. That's the key, as we were told. So that's that safekeeping part. When I work with people in the class, I put them what I call a career bubble. And you might remember me, I may have spoken to you about this before, but that is where while you're going through the process, and if you're going through the book too, you're not to speak with people on the outside about what you're coming up with in this, the kind of information that you are clarifying for yourself. Because all you need is one side eye. All you need is one, well, yeah, if you just blah, 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 or mm-hmm. have you thought about blah, 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 or mm-hmm. I have a great friend who can direct you here, or something can throw you off. All of us, we're so influenced by the outside.
Yeah.
And how are you going to make a living if you use...
Yeah, but, I hear that a lot.
Yeah.
You're going for what position and how's that going to help you? And or you're going for this degree, how's that going to help you in this position?
But when you do this
work,
you
can
tell them.
How are you going to make a living making 26,000? I mean,
well, it
it's
may
none
not
of their
be
business.
Just that. It may be like more streams of income and maybe doing a little bit here. And sometimes it's very nuanced. And sometimes we need that flexibility. We need to bring other elements in. And I always say, like, if your dream was to be a rock star, it doesn't need to translate directly into being a rock star, but some elements of having admiration, you know, being in front, doing something in the public eye, doing some of those elements that are true to a person who's doing something like that are probably going to have to be there in the work you do in order for you to thrive in it. And it's breaking it down to what are those elements? How can I bring some of that into my next position? It doesn't have, it's not never literal. It is never literal. It's way more nuanced. That's how our brains are. We're nuanced.
So where did you get the ideas from your book, for your book? Did you get them from different clients and different stories they've shared with
all
you?
Of it. Well, I just doing this work, the parachute work to start out with, was helped me develop the process that I use, and the clients. And I've worked with, like I said, probably more than 1500. I haven't counted, but a lot. And I've been doing the class successfully now for 3.5 years, and had pretty full classes. I I get a lot from my clients, absolutely, 100%. But I also am very, I get to use my own imagination to come up. The things that I know are true for me are going to be true for the people with ADHD, how I see the world. And I've incorporated a lot of the way I see the world, which is in color, which is in metaphors, which is in simple instruction. I always say, don't give me something if it has more than three instructions. I can't do. Don't do it. I can't do it. I'll give it to hand it off to somebody else to do. I need three simple instructions to get something done. I'm not one of these people who can read instruction books and fix something. Now, other people can with ADHD, but I'm not one of those people. So the thing is to just be true to who you are, and I'm always true to who I am and what I see. And some of the metaphors and graphics that I've done, I've put in the book. And I had a graphic artist help me with them who has ADHD and who also sees things from that perspective and also was a teacher and got a coaching degree. Like she has all those elements that I needed to help me translate a lot of the stuff that went in the book and how it's formatted. So it was a team effort. It wasn't just me. I had an editor who has ADHD. And she understood how to word things so that if I said something that wasn't clear, she helped clarify it a little bit. So did editing that way. There's going to be more editing iterations because I've, when you look through it, you see all these, oh God, I do. What's that? But I'm very picky.
I know that feeling. I just finished writing a book.
Oh, good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
My book is a very important book because it follows my life for my journey with autism. But it has one very important message in it for those who have ADHD and ASD, and that is you need to step out of your comfort zone.
No kidding. That's a big one. That's a big one.
Yeah.
But also step out of your comfort zone, but be true. For me, I would say in my journey, it's just being who I am and staying true and to myself and becoming more and more of me by saying no to things I don't want to do that aren't going to serve me, and really looking at what's going to serve me and what's not going to serve me, what's going to serve my clients, what's going to serve my population, and how I had like cl a class. Actually helped me with developing the whole planet because I had to think of another model besides the parachute one, and they helped me come up with a planet. So it's a team thing. It wasn't just all me, I had people help me put it together, and I knew what I wanted. And of course, when you're the author, it has to be okay. You have to do. I wrote everything, but they had to put it all together for in a way that made it palatable as well. So it was a team effort.
So you've seen your book being put to use already.
Oh yeah, I just had a couple of people call me and say, I've been going through the book and they were interested in the class and now I want to go deeper. And I've come up with some ideas. And what happens when you do it on your own, which is what the people I talk to, I go, are you working with anyone on this? No, I just kind of went through it. They'll only go like do five planets instead of seven, right? You've got to do the whole damn thing. And so that's where the accountability comes in. And also diving deeper into the why part of, why you choose certain things and how things are coming out. And starting to piece things together with other people that are also going through the process is really use it's super helpful. It makes it a much deeper dynamic. It really helps to solidify everything. But I don't know if that answered you. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it
I
did.
always have to
Now,
check.
I noticed that you've had people write stories in your book. You feel that when they write the stories, they begin to see a pattern
That's
with
it.
themselves.
Yes. The stories serve a number of purposes. They're always po uplifting positive stories of your from any time in your life, starting from as early as you can possibly remember, of events or anything that you did that was uplifting. And there's a format that I use that I changed completely for what I do to simplify it and clarify it to get the best results for people. But the first purpose of doing the stories is to identify the skills that you use in those stories, and then eventually prioritizing the skills that keep coming up over and over again that you want to be using in your work. So that's where the deeper dive comes in. But also, once you've written them all, to be able to go, I see a theme. You're right. It's like put on your detective hat. Remember in the book I mentioned, now you've got all these clues. You can spread them out on a table. You can be your own detective. Put on your fake pipe or whatever and your Sherlock Holmes cape and start putting all these clues together. Now, some of the tools work, might not work for you, but there are other ones that will, right? So once you start piecing everything together, you start seeing repetition. You start seeing a theme, a pattern that is, and I do one particular exercise in the class that really starts that process off for people, you know, and it's also in the book. But when you do it and you hear other people doing it, you can help them put their patterns together. So it is about putting those clues together to, and that repetition to see what is, and getting more excited about what you're coming up with, you know, feeling more confident that, yeah, sometimes people come up, the things they come up with are things from their past that they never acted on. From way back, say if they're 40, this thing came up in their 20s. And they said, no, I have to be more practical. I have to, you know, the status quo thing. So they go that route instead, and then they forget about the other one, but somehow it's going to come up here. You can't avoid it. It's going to come up. It's going to rear its beautiful head. And it's going to tell you, time to start looking at this in a different way. I can give plenty of examples, but I don't know how much time you have, but you know, I give examples in the book also. For that. So everything in the book has examples of what I'm talking about to clarify, because I know you can't just give instructions and not have a way for people to relate to it, you know, on a personal level.
Now, what can people take away from your workbook?
They can take away what I want them to take away is, number one, feeling more confident in a direction that is starting to show up big time. It's starting to like really look like this is the direction not only should I take, but I should have taken years ago. And like I said, passed it up for whatever reason. And here are some things that I need to do to solidify my direction, which is to talk to people, go to organizations, do research, right? So research is a big part of this. And having those conversations, or if you don't do it, you haven't done it. You just haven't. So that's a lot of times what they take away is the direction. And if they haven't got that, they're well on their way. They just need to talk to a few people to clarify some stuff. So it's just kind of cleaning up and continuing to clean up and continuing to get excited, because you know how it is. If you don't have that energy wind beneath your wing kind of thing, that dopamine-y kind of push to move on at times, it makes it real hard. And the right direction is going to give you that on at different points along the way. It's going to keep giving you that. Whereas the wrong direction is going to go flat.
And finally, where can people find out more about you and your book?
Amazon.com. Amazon. It's called A Course for ADHD Adults and Teens. Unlock Your Career Path. You can just put my name in it, Shel Mendelson, and it will come up because it's the only one out there that I've done. And my website, I actually prefer people go to my website and just click on where it says course book, and you can order it there as well. And it will be available on different platforms. I'm looking at a platform called Lay It Flat Books, because the one thing I forgot to mention is it's spiral bound. Can people see, is this going to be on YouTube or anything? Can they
Yeah, it will
see
be
it?
on YouTube as well.
Okay, so you can see that, which means everything lays flat. And then you have this as a fold out. So talk about lots of goodies in it. But so I found this platform called Lay It Flat that I've been going after, and I will be on that at some point. I'm talking to the guy to get me there. And I'm not sure, a bunch of other platforms as well, but for now it's Amazon and my website.
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. That was Shel Mendelson on Read Miles, and I'll see you in the next one. Thank you, Shel.
Thank you so much, Reed. It was a pleasure.
Not a problem.